Welcome back to our 105th episode of the Launcher Farm Show, where I interview Susanna Haney, who is a broker with the Colorado Real Estate Group in Colorado Springs. In this episode, Susanna and I talk about why she chose to stay focused on a smaller farm and double down rather than try to expand her area. She also shares how she started from a small start of 350 homes and learned to build deep one-on-one relationships that have paid dividends in her business. And we talk about what she did to stay focused after 8 months of not seeing a payoff and how that moment shaped her business in the future. And she shares a super easy way to bootstrap your farm startup if you don't have a lot of cash to get going. And we talk about how she leveraged a community garage sale to connect with the community and create a full-fledged marketing system around it. Plus, we talk about a ton of other ideas that you can use to grow your geographic farm. So be sure to check out this episode, like and subscribe, and enjoy the episode with Susanna. Welcome back to another episode of the Launcher Farm Show. I'm your host, Ryan Smith, and today we've got a great guest. It's Susanna Haney. She is the broker of Colorado Real Estate Group in Colorado Springs. So Susanna, take a second, tell us a bit about yourself and why you're here.
Hey, Ryan. Thank you for having me. I'm super excited. Yes, so I was born and raised in Germany. I came to the United States in 1995. And then I was a stay-at-home mom until my husband retired from the military. And then he looked at me, he said, "So, what are you going to do?" And that's when, you know, I looked around and I had always been interested in real estate and worked in real estate marketing before. And so I just figured, well, you know what, I'll get my license. And that was in 2011. Nice. And it's been an awesome ride since then.
Yeah, you came in at a sort of good time. I started in 2008 when things were rough, crazy, and then started to get a little bit better. So you came in at a good time to learn. So when you got started, obviously you had some experience, you said, but what was your kind of beginning like? What was that first year where you're like, "Hey, I'm just trying to get things rolling"?
Yeah. Well, back then, because we were at the bottom, we were really at the bottom of the market right before it started going back up, and people were asking me why I was even going into real estate. I started with a brokerage that was providing me with investor leads. So that's how I started out. That was a rough start. Investors can be pretty hard. Yes. But you know, you just live and learn. And being from a foreign country and the language, while I speak English well, some terminology and how things are done, that was a little different. And you know, we had just moved to Colorado Springs. Okay. I didn't know anything. And so I just had to run a little faster than everybody else.
So what worked for you in that first year and what didn't work for you then?
Well, I started pretty much right away my blog, which is what I really loved doing and had done before. We had still some military connections, and because the military just moves around a lot, I was able to generate myself some leads through that. Nice. And then continued to work with the investors, and that just kind of phased out as the market became stronger and I focused much more into residential real estate.
Yeah, I think it's important to emphasize the transition and the growth, because a lot of times agents get stuck in one way of doing business and things dry up, markets change, things shift, and people don't adapt. So it sounds like you've done a good job at shifting, at knowing where you're at in the market, seeing opportunities and shifting. So what forced you to start shifting other than the market? Was there anything else that was shifting you to get back into the traditional residential stuff?
The investors started falling off, and when you're not making money anymore with one thing, you know, you really need to look at another thing. Plus, you know, diversification, I think, in your business is important. And I think it was a fairly natural progression as well. My residential customers and friends now, a lot of them, I think are, you know, they're more faithful, I guess, is what you could say, yeah. You know, to me versus, you know, for investors, it's just money. Whoever brings the deal is it. And that's just not how I wanted to do real estate. I'm so invested in my clients that was just not a good fit for me.
That was similar to me. I was doing about 15 or 20% of my deals were investors at the beginning. And then I'm an analytical person and I like that, but it was just very transactional and not as relational. And I realized that I really enjoyed the relational side of things a lot more than the pure transaction. Plus, like you said, the loyalty is not always there. It's just who can get me the best deal, who can find it for me right now.
So loyalty is the perfect word. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
So I want to dive in today about talking about your farm. Obviously, we're here on Launch Your Farm. We're talking about farms. So you have what I think is a really cool opportunity because you have what I would consider a smaller farm or a micro farm. So talk to us a bit about your farm and how that got started and why you started doing farming.
So it started with just a couple clients that happened to purchase in this one subdivision. Subdivision was fairly close to where I lived. And I liked it. It was very unusual. It's a traditional neighborhood development, which was, well, I think it still is the only one in Colorado Springs. So it just has certain features. It's very focused on communication. So, you know, we have garage alleys. And long story short, I liked the style. I liked the neighborhood. And then when I looked at the numbers, even though back then I think I started out at not even 350 houses. I figured out I just lean in and I start working. And because the neighborhood was so small, it was a great opportunity for me to actually create these very deep one-on-one relationships with the residents there that later on became, you know, my most loyal clients and friends that then recommended me further in that neighborhood. And that's kind of how I could grow.
And that's something I'm a big believer in. And this is what I teach all the time. And anyone who's watched the show knows I talk about CPR and it's community positioning and relationships and real, true, genuine farming at a high level. The end goal is the relationship, not the transaction. And so many people focus on traditional farming is it's out there just beating your chest or saying how great you are, just talking about real estate. And they try to like skip over the relationship part. And the reality is when you learn to build relationships correctly, you'll get way more transactions. It becomes easier to get the transactions. You get a better experience and you get more referrals. But a lot of agents are afraid of focusing on the relationship because they just think like, I got to focus on the real estate. So obviously it sounds like you're very intentional from the beginning of saying, hey, I want to start to build relationships. So what did you do in those first few years of saying, hey, I'm going to focus on building relationships?
So I started out with actually connecting with a builder.
Nice.
First. And they in this specific neighborhood, they have a community center, so they would have events. So I would just say, hey, you know, I'm helping out. Let me know if you have, you know, a need for some extra hands. And yes, they did. Nice. And that gave me the opportunity to, again, personally meet individual residents. And it wasn't always easy. When after 8 months, I haven't gotten a listing, there was a moment, I will admit to it, where I sat in my office and started crying because I was like, this is not working out.
Yeah.
So, and then shortly after that, I got my first listing.
So how long have you been farming for then?
2015. Okay. That specific neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think the time frame you shared is very common for a lot of agents too, is that in my experience, it's been between 3 months and 9 months is when people tend to start to give up. They start to feel like this isn't working if they're depending on how they're doing farming. And that time frame is very painful and it can be very your self-doubt. You're going, am I spending too much money? I've had a lot of people talk to me and say like, hey, my partner is pissed off because I've spent all this money or I spent all this time and I'm not getting the results. What pushed you through to keep going? Because I find that is the part that most agents are not all, most, but a lot of agents are missing to go, I just need to keep doing this. And if I do this long enough, it'll pay off. So what kept you going?
Actually, I don't really know.
All right. That's honest. That's good.
Yeah. I mean, I still had other transactions that kept me afloat and I bootstrapped a lot. You know, and then really liking the neighborhood helped. And like I said, I had created these relationships that were very friendly and personal, and that kept me there. And then, of course, you know, it was kind of nice. The builder needed somebody to sit in their information office. Mm-hmm. And that was a free office for me. So I nice. Just took it.
Nice. That's great. And I think too, part of from an outsider looking in, I think part of it is because of the size of the farm that you're doing, you didn't take on too much. And this is where I see a lot of agents make that mistake of doing a farm of 2,000, 3,000, 5,000 homes, and then they burn out even quicker because it's a lot of energy and a lot of time, and they don't have the time or the resources to maintain it. So it sounds like it was manageable enough that you weren't losing a ton of money or time to do it, but you still stuck with it. Is that sound right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, in the end, you know, once I finally got that first listing, that was all that was needed to really stick with it, you know.
So that's, I would say, you just need that first hit. Once you get that hit, it's addictive, and then you go, okay, this is worth it, it's worthwhile, and I'm gonna stick with it. So what were you doing in that first year to start to get business other than the events and or helping with the builder and stuff?
You know, I did have a few, I did send out postcards, door knocking, you know, people were really receptive. And I think that's actually a sign of a new neighborhood. People are eager to meet other people, even if it's a real estate agent. So I always felt door knocking was much easier for me. Especially in those early days, people would listen and they were interested. And, So that really helped. Door knocking was a huge part. And then just following up with personal cards and, you know, and then that they would see me in the neighborhood all the time. And some people actually thought I lived in the neighborhood.
That's a good point too, because I get a lot of agents asking me about, do I have to live in the neighborhood? Some people say they have to live in the neighborhood, and I'm on this side of I'd rather not live in the neighborhood, but you don't have to. And this is where a lot of agents get stuck on this. And I just taught a class yesterday for an office, and I was talking about myths, and that was one of the things that came up. And is that people think, well, I have to choose my neighborhood because people need to know that I live here, that I support this area. And I would say you actually can support it in a better way, because you're not worrying about what your neighbors think or what happens. Yeah. You can dive in and give support in a very different way. Not that you should or shouldn't live in there. It's just, you shouldn't let that stop you from farming area, whether you live in there or not.
Yeah. Which is another reason to have a neighborhood like that close to you.
Yes, exactly.
So that you can be there if you don't live.
Yeah, exactly. So you mentioned that you were doing about 350 homes. How did you start to expand? Cause I know you're doing a little bit larger area now. So what did that look like for you to start saying, okay, hey, I'm going to branch out more and start to reach more people?
You know, it came very natural because the neighborhood wasn't built out when I started.
Right.
And so, you know, we had still a few more filings to go. And the developer just finished the neighborhood in 2022. We've closed the last house. And so we're now built out. And they're looking to start a neighboring filing that will belong to a different neighborhood, but it'll be named almost the same. So I'm kind of hoping to get myself established over there as well. And kind of, because they are going to have similar names, I'm thinking that's going to create enough confusion that it's not going to matter.
Right.
So that's kind of how I put those things together in my head.
That makes sense. And you said 2015 was when it started, and you're now 7 or 8 years in. I think it's important to note, because a lot of people, when they're looking at doing a farm, sometimes they look at established neighborhoods. However, going after a new neighborhood, depending on where you live, can be a great opportunity, but like you've experienced, it can take time to fully develop. You can take time for people to actually want to move. And in my experience, I've seen usually there's a few transactions in the first 2 years, because people maybe bought pre-build and then maybe they sell them off. And then you get people who are, again, depending on the size and the price point, is you get people staying there for 5, 6, 7 years. And then you start to see that turnover happening because people have lived in the home and now they're doing it. Would that be something that you've seen in your own experience then?
Yes. And that probably was the reason why I didn't get any business right away, because everything was so new and I hadn't considered that. What I like about this specific neighborhood from the business side is that we have townhomes, We have a few condos, and then we have single family homes. So what that does is you hit different kind of market segments. If you only have single family homes, you get a certain buyer or a certain homeowner. When you have townhomes, you have a certain homeowner buyer. And especially the townhomes usually turn over much quicker than the single family homes, which is really helpful, even if they're not as expensive as the single family homes. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's something I talk about all the time is that my experience and my belief is that it's good to have a mix of styles of homes because for that exact reason, you get different people at different price points, at different times in their life, at different kind of stages of life, moving in and out of that area. You sometimes will get people who start out in a condo, then move up to a town or move up to the detached home because maybe their kids go to that school and they want to stay in that area. And you have a lot more opportunities to catch people. When I was originally looking at farming a number of years ago, before I got into the farm that I was doing, I was looking at an area that on paper seemed great because it was all executive homes, it was a higher price point, but then there's really only like one type of buyer coming in and they end up staying there for a lot longer. And there's not that cross moving across, which in my experience has been, is a good thing to enhance it. So what are you, if anything, are you doing to reach the different price points or styles? Are you doing anything different as far as your messaging, or is it kind of blanketed to everyone?
I send out pretty much the same postcard to everybody else. I try to provide as much value as possible. So we switched from paper newsletters to, you know, online newsletters, which, you know, proved actually, except with a few exceptions, which was actually a really smart move, not only, you know, cost-wise, but, you know, I mean, we have a high open rate. I mean, 35% is not bad. And so it's very welcome. I do have some folks that say, you know, we really liked the printed version, but it, you know, that just gets really cost prohibitive at a certain point. So, and plus we can include clicks, you know, call to actions and things like that, that we just couldn't do with the printed version. So everybody gets that. And the postcards, we send out usually one postcard a month, which comes on top of the digital newsletter. So my experience is it's because there's a lot of noise in the online world, and to really get through, it just takes so much. So if we have an event or any news, that it's really hard to, you know, get to people. Every once in a while, I go to a listing appointment and the owners say, when I ask them how they found me, it's like, oh, I was just looking around and, you know, looked online and you had good reviews, so I called you. I'm like, you mean the 52 postcards that I have sent you over the last 3 years did not do anything? No, it didn't register. So it's hard. You just have to be very diligent about that.
And that's why I say that you need to have a variety of things that you're doing. And I teach this, what I call the scope method, and it's creating balance in your marketing because certain people are going to resonate with certain things. So certain people will resonate with a postcard. Certain people will resonate with a community and event. Some people will resonate with personal relationships. So you have to, if you want to reach the most amount of people and get the biggest impact, you need to make sure you're reaching different people because you don't know who's going to resonate with what or who's going to connect with what at the right time. So it sounds like you're doing a lot of great things to cross over that. So how do you decide what to do in your farm? Because for a lot of agents, that's a struggle where they go, there's a million things they could do. How do you, or do you have a litmus test where you're like, hey, this is how I'm going to decide what I spend or what I do?
So I think my biggest mistake probably is that I don't have a set budget.
Okay. That's my rule number one. I always start with the budget. So.
I know. And so I've been listening to your podcast here in the last few months, and I was like, maybe I should do this. But I'm like I mentioned earlier, I'm a bootstrapper by, you know, nature. And so hold on, where was I going with that?
Is how do you decide what strategies and things you put into the...
Yeah, so it's actually trial and error. Okay. I I know what I want to do. So I started out, of course, you know, with the postcards and the newsletter. And then I really love yard sales. It's my favorite thing to do. And so I started a yard sale, and I run the yard sale every year. And that is, and so it's a whole program. So having a full strategy and a sequence of pre-marketing, marketing, event, and post-marketing, that is huge. So last year, for example, we're getting a little bit more elaborate every year. So last year, for example, I gave out donuts to everybody that signed up and participated.
Nice.
And then the neighbors saw it, and they, hey, you know, and it's like a local specialty donut shop. And
nice.
So the neighbors like, hey, I didn't get those. I'm like, oh, to sign up, you know? So, yeah. So again, you know, if there's no interest, we'll just drop that and we'll just try something else and just slowly move forward with that.
And I think that's a big part of where a lot of agents are missing, is that they don't try things or aren't willing to do that because they're so afraid of fear of failure that they don't want to try something, or they don't want to do this. So they either don't start it, or they stick with something because they're afraid of doing something and then giving up on it and thinking that it's bad. And I've always said that your farm really is like a laboratory. It's a place where you can try things, test out things, and you should be doing that on a consistent basis. I've always said that you should have something that works consistently and you know it's going to work. And then you should always be trying something new to see, is this working better or can I add it in? And if you aren't doing that, you can become very stagnant. And I've coached some agents who've been 30 plus years in the business, and they came to me because they said what I was doing 10 years ago or even 5 years ago or 20 years ago isn't working anymore. And if you aren't prepared to adapt and evolve and change approaches, you can start to lose market share. So how do you know that something's working? Do you have like I'm going to keep doing this or this, I'm just going to take it off the list.
So with the yard sale, I will just tell you, I love it. And our neighborhood has the best yard sales. They have the best stuff. And I'm the first one to admit that I'm buying a lot there. So I will keep that regardless. I think how I do it would adjust according to how many people have signed up. And we had some slower years. I insisted, for example, so the pandemic was a whole new experience for me. So I insisted on having a yard sale during this time for various reasons. First of all, I did lose quite a bit of market share and awareness during that time. And that was kind of heartbreaking. Plus, I mean, it was outside, you know. So I didn't think it was a big deal. The developer had its problems. So we had to work through some challenges, but it was really, really well received. And we had a huge amount of people show up. And I think it was because there was a need, but you know what? That could have totally tanked.
Yeah.
And it was a risk that I was willing to take because I needed it. Yep. So, you know, so I did that. We've had a couple of events that just did not work out. For example, paper shredding. Waste of money for me. So that's not a repeat. Wine tasting, huge. Love it. We're doing that again. We just put it on the books for March. And again, you know, you just experiment your way through what could work. You know, people will approach you and say, why don't you do this? And I'm like, okay, I'll try that out. And if it doesn't work, you just don't do it anymore. I had a coffee morning, free coffee and donuts, and it was okay.
Yeah. Not great. Yeah. And that's, I think it's important to, like I said, is to do that, because what works for you may not work for me, or what you think might work may not actually end up working. And it's something you got to kind of test. And each area is different. And people say farming doesn't work in my area. Farming will work in your area. It's what strategies will work in your area. Yes. And you have to figure out, a paper shredding event may work in someone else's area, but not in yours. Or a community garage sale may work extremely well in yours, but not in someone else's. So you have to kind of test it out. Sometimes if you know what your community needs, it's easy to say, like, maybe you don't have a playground and you could do a fundraiser for a playground or whatever. It becomes easier to spot those opportunities. And this is why when you shift from transactional real estate and you shift from just talking about real estate and yourself, you can see opportunities to create events for marketing opportunities, for partnerships and things like that, because you're thinking as that ambassador for your farm and not just a, I'm a real estate agent who's trying to do a transaction. It sounds like you've done a really good job at looking for opportunities, seeing what people want and what they need and creating cool experiences for them.
Yeah. And I think there might also be a little bit of a misconception. What is a successful event? So for me, a successful event is not necessarily that I have a huge amount of people show up to the event. Actually, a successful event for me is how much attention did I get?
Yeah.
You know, how many people did sign up? How many show up? It's always a different story.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, how many people did sign up? How many new contacts was I able to create through this event? So with the last event that I did, I had holiday cards that I sent out, and I included a QR code that people could scan, and then they could select a nonprofit organization. We have three nonprofit organizations that we would donate to. And depending on how many votes they get times 10, that's the donation that they would receive. And it's, of course, even better if the organizer of that nonprofit lives in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And so that's appreciated. I didn't get their business, just to say, but it doesn't matter. Yeah. It was another interaction. And so we're looking, hey, 21 new contacts were created that I didn't have before from this one. And it was nonprofit, and I'm training. And that's the other thing. I'm training my residents to do things. They need to know when I send something out, there's something good coming out of it. And so I feel there's some training that you do.
Yep. 100%. And that becomes, again, that shifting from just talking about yourself to getting them to take action, providing value to them to get them to want to get the stuff and to look for the things you send, because now it becomes something they enjoy. And it also ties you to other things. And I talk about this all the time, is that when you do a great event or you do something that's impactful, when people feel good about themselves because they're participating, they tie those good feelings to you. So for example, like a food drive, when someone donates food, they're the ones who are giving the food, but you're the one who's orchestrating it. They feel good about themselves. Therefore, when they are supporting you, supporting the cause, they tie those good feelings to you. And it creates a very different atmosphere and a very different relationship than just, I'm Ryan and I sell a bunch of homes in the area. So it just helps create that. And then it furthers the relationships. And then they have an impact. Like, I think agents are missing the ball if they're not doing any type of community event, and especially, like you said, hyper local, where if the organization or the cause is in the community that you're serving, because people will know them and it will help create more buzz and create more good feelings for everyone doing it.
Yeah. And I mean, it all boils down to work. We've mentioned that earlier. So yesterday, actually, I started calling everybody that actually made a selection in my nonprofit, and I actually have their phone number, which some decide to provide and some just don't, but call them up. And sure enough, somebody said, oh, by the way, if you know somebody, you know, I don't want to put it on the market, but you know, if you know something, I'm like, yeah, make some notes, you know? So that's great. You know, sometimes you see the fear in people's eyes when you call when you knock on their door and you tell them you're a realtor. It's like, oh, I don't want to sell. I'm like, well, no, that's not what I'm here for. I just want to tell you about our new event. You know, we have the yard sale coming up. Just wanted to let you know. So when you call them because to let them know how many their preferred nonprofit is getting, I mean, that's just awesome.
Exactly. And I think you hit the nail on the head too, is when you're at the door and you're there for a reason other than real estate, it becomes easy to have those conversations versus if you're there to just prospect, people usually shut down, and they could be fantastic, nice people. But if you're just there saying, hey, are you thinking about making a move? They're just going to put their guard up. If you come from contribution for the community, it becomes so much easier to have real conversations. And I've had so many good conversations with people saying like, hey, we're promoting this event, we got this thing going on. And then they start chatting with you, and then they're like, Oh, and by the way, I run the real estate team or whatever. And then it's so much easier to connect with them and talk about real estate than just, are you thinking about making a move? And it's like when you walk into a shoe store and they ask, are you looking for, can I help you? And they say, oh, I'm just looking.
Oh no.
It's it changes the dialogue, which is a huge, huge way of a much better way of building relationships, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree with you. And you know, it takes a plan, and then it takes diligence and perseverance to get through.
Exactly. So speaking of plan, where are you heading now with your farm? What's the future look like for you in the next couple of years?
So expanding into this new subdivision, certainly, but I don't know when that's going to happen. I have started to look into maybe starting a different farm, different geofarm somewhere else, just to cut and then, you know, just hoping that I could be less involved. It's a learning process, because just sending somebody a postcard once a month, as we all know, doesn't work. So I'm in the learning process of, okay, what does work? Without me actually physically being there, or how often would I have to be there in order to just brand myself and create some trust?
Yep. And I think the good thing for you is that you have done those experiments, you've tested things and you've tried things, and you have a track record, and you can then go back and say, okay, that didn't work, I'm going to take that off the table. This did work. And you can kind of create almost like a super plan and speed up that process. Cause if you were to start over from the beginning and didn't have any of the experience, you're having to retry things. So you can get quicker successes and get that traction. But also, like you said, you can figure out the things that don't take the super amount of work and start to really piece it together to say, this is what I plan to do because of my time and budget and energy that I want to put into it, and then get those results hopefully quicker and with less work.
Well, that's how I found you. You know, I'm always looking for new inspiration, more information. And there really isn't much out there beyond just, okay, just make sure that there's enough turnover. And you send these cards out. Because it is such a more complex, you know, process. And so I'm like, yeah, no, not this, not this, not this. Oh, somebody actually has a podcast, you know? And so that's how I started listening and learning.
That's why I'm here doing what I'm doing, because it is, I'm not tooting my own horn, but a lot of agents struggle trying to find what to do in farms because they don't have the ideas, they don't know, and then they either do it and then fail, or don't have the success, and then they don't have the path to get there, and then they try it, and then they hit that 7, 8, 9 month mark, and then go, this isn't working, and they quit. And the truth is, if you had a good plan and you knew it was going to work, you could stick with it a lot longer and see the results. But for a lot of people, they don't know what to do. And I think you're in a good position in that you have built out something great. You've got money coming in from the farm. You're getting transactions. You have the systems in place. And this is where a lot of agents don't do that. And they don't tweak their stuff. And they try to create a farm that's too big. And I always say, like, if you're going to go too big, you're just going to fail even at a bigger scale. So mess up on your small farm, mess up on those things, like learn the ins and outs, and then expand as you go, and then it becomes easier to grow without having to waste a lot of time.
Who was the guest that had 9,000, expanded to a farm of 9,000 or multiple farms?
I've had a few people that have had that. Jenny Wiemer has a bunch like that. I've had some, the most I think I've had on the show was 40,000 people in their farm, which to me, that's push beyond just a regular farm. That's just mass marketing. But yeah, that's a lot. Like 9,000 is a large farm, but you got to have the systems and tools in place to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I just cannot imagine that would work, or how that would work. So I'm going to have to listen around a little bit more.
And I think when you scale up to that size too, then you lose effectiveness as well. And we were talking this before we started recording, is that a lot of people, Jenny will tell you, the first one to tell you, that she said her first farm, I think she said she had like 80% market share in her first farm. Then she got 50% when she expanded. Then it was like 30%. And then what happens is, if you keep going up, you don't have the time and the energy for those personal relationships. So you have to find that sweet spot of how much time and energy and effort do you want? How much market share do you want? How much relationships do you want to build? And then figure out what's going to work for you. And what's going to work for one person may be different than for another person. I share my friend Adam's story all the time. He started a little farm, and it was 280 homes. Mm-hmm. And people said, oh, you're crazy, that's too small. Even when I was coaching him, I'm like, that's a little small. And he said his plan was, I have $100 a month that I can spend. And if I lose it at the end of the year, my wife's not going to kill me. So he put away $100 a month and invested it into this farm. And he ended up doing 8 transactions, and there was 11 transactions in that farm. And he said it was because he built really tight connections with those 280 people. He put his time and energy into those people. You couldn't achieve that with 2,800 people. Like, you have to be purposeful with it. So, but then also take, like you said, is take what's working for you and then to start to expand. And if you do that, I think you'll see good results and a lot quicker too.
And door knocking really doesn't cost anything but time. Yeah. So if you don't have the transactions, you should have the time.
Exactly.
You know? And it's just, you know, door knocking can be tough. You know, not everybody likes it.
And that's part of what I'm here to do, is teach people and show them how to do it in a way that is successful and fun to do and easy to do. And this is where I would say it takes the same amount of energy to go door knock with a good approach as it does with a bad approach. It takes the same amount of energy to cold call with a good approach or a bad approach. It takes the same amount of energy and cost to send a postcard with a good message versus a bad message. It's figuring out what those approaches are and mastering that so that you get more out of it. And that's in my opinion, the key to really leveling up. So for you, if you were to give one last piece of advice to our viewers, if they're thinking about starting a smaller farm, what advice would you give and why?
To just be persistent, be persistent and personally involved.
Yeah. That's great advice. It's consistency and persistence is the number one deciding factor, in my opinion, of what's going to make a farm work or not. So that's great. Yeah. And we always wrap up with a best book. So what's one book that you'd recommend that's had an impact on your life or you think would have an impact on our viewers?
The Comfort Crisis. Okay. That was, I don't know if you're familiar with that book. And I don't even have the author.
That's okay. I'll find it and put it in the show notes. So
Comfort Crisis, that had a huge impact for me. It's more life overall, and it packages a lot of things into this one story of him actually going to Alaska and hunting. But there were a lot of things packaged in there. And one of the things that I just really liked about it is the author was doing a Misogi every year. Misogi is a challenge that you have a 50% chance of not completing. And that's the challenge, you know? And I thought that was actually also really good to do and to transfer into my business. It's like, you know, sometimes you just have to step out, not become comfortable, and do something that you might have only a 50% chance of actually completing, no matter how hard you work at it. And so that kind of sticks in the back of my mind. And if something is uncomfortable, that is a good way to kind of just step out of your comfort zone and expand knowledge and your life overall.
That's awesome. I'll have to check that out. I'm a big fan of trying to get uncomfortable intentionally. So I'll have to check that. That's awesome. And how can our viewers check out what you're up to, connect with you, and find out more about what you're doing?
So pretty much on all social media platforms, you can find me under the handle your COS house, your COS house. And, I have a website with, extensive blog, about Colorado Springs, and same name, yourcoloradospringshouse.com.
Awesome. So we'll put that in the show notes as well as your book recommendation. So thank you for being on the show. I really appreciate you sharing your insights, your experience, and the trials and tribulations you've gone through to get where you're at. And I know that our viewers, if they take that into consideration and apply some of the strategies you've talked about, will have success. So thank you for being here and sharing that with our audience. I know they're going to get a lot out of this.
Yep. Well, thank you for having me.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for checking out today's episode. If you'd like more videos like this, be sure to like and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Check out our Facebook page and our other social media channels. Looking forward to bringing you more great content like this, and happy farming.